Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off this week by going way off the grid, way outside the NFL. Connor will be part of that. Jenny will be a part of that. Our producer, Brandon, will be a part of that. We will eventually get to the news. And as always, we will wrap things up with the six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, it's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. I think the date's May 28th, May 29th, whatever it is. So there's not a ton going on in the NFL. We will get to football stuff, but this segment we're going to do at the top of the show, inspired by Jenny going all the way, digging deep into her childhood in State College, Pennsylvania.
That's correct.
And I think you can explain what you brought up. Like, I don't want to steal your thunder here.
I'm not quite sure how we got on the subject. I know, actually, we were talking about the best thing we ate this weekend. And yep. Connor's answer was McDonald's.
Yep.
So
that's actually exactly how we got there.
So we discussed, fast food restaurants that we like. And we got on the topic of Wendy's, and I mentioned the Wendy's Super Bar, which was a large part of my childhood, because after swim meets, we would go to the Wendy's Super Bar. You could load up at the pasta bar and then Mexican Fiesta and then the salad bar. And there was also that little dessert thing. So I would get fettuccine at the pasta bar. I would have ground beef mixed with sour cream and then nacho chips at Mexican Fiesta. And then at dessert.
That's like a pregnant woman's like shout out to my wife who is pregnant. Like, that is like a pregnant woman's like plate
wheelhouse
there.
Yeah. And then for dessert, I would get the chocolate and vanilla puddings mixed with the strawberry sauce on top.
Yep.
My God,
that's something else.
What a gourmet meal.
That's amazing. So Jenny brings this up, and of course I had been to the Super Bar.
I had never heard of the Super
Connor
Bar.
Connor had never heard of the Super Bar.
Not even
so,
on my
blasphemy.
Radar.
Yeah.
So Jenny went on her phone and was able to find evidence of the existence of the Super Bar. Brandon, can we give the listeners the commercial that we found?
You've seen high bars, low bars, wet bars, crow bars, but you've never seen nothing like Wendy's new Super Bar.
Wow, all the Italian and Mexican dishes I can eat, plus a super selection of salads. And all this at a great price. This is a Super Bar.
Rex Chapman.
I thought they wanted my autograph.
So I think everybody saw, like I think we may have cracked the case there. I think, Brandon, I think it just said, I think it said a participating Wendy's, right? So maybe the Wendy's near Connor, maybe they weren't participating Wendy's.
Maybe the Clark Summit Wendy's just never had a Super Bar.
And the star of that commercial, in a polo shirt tucked into stonewashed jeans, very relevant right now, it's in the news, Rex Chapman, who was just suspended from Twitter, was the star of this Wendy's Super Bar commercial.
Do you think there's a way to use the Super Bar commercial in a block or charge way?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good question.
There
good
you go.
Question.
Maybe we're going to have to review the tape again.
And we'll reach out to Rex Chapman and see if we can get an answer on that. So in honor of Rex Chapman and the Wendy's Super Bar, we decided that we were going to rank our top five fast food places. And because this is a nostalgic segment, because we went back to the 80s for that commercial, I thought it would be important to set some ground rules here. And the ground rules that we agreed on were, this has to be a place that you ate at before you went to college, right? So it has to be a part of your childhood, right? And so for me, that means, and I think for you guys too, no In-N-Out, no
Chick-fil-A,
right? Like we all
no
grew
Chipotle.
Up in the Northeast. Like, so there are places that didn't exist. Panera didn't exist when I was that age. So, or at least not that I knew of. So it has to be kind of a place that's, what do you call it, a legacy fast food place? At least a place that's been around forever.
Legacy fast food, excellent.
Yes. Legacy fast food place. So it's like the American Airlines of fast food, right? So what we're going to do, we're going to rank, we've all ranked our top five. I haven't seen Jenny's list. Jenny hasn't seen mine. I haven't seen Connor's list. Connor hasn't seen mine. Connor hasn't seen Jenny's list. Brandon, our producer, is sitting over here. He's going to be our unofficial moderator for this segment. So we're going to go 5-1, and we'll just lay them out there. And Brandon, we'll start with number five here. My number five, Burger King.
Mm. I chose Taco Bell, but it was hard for me to leave off Arby's because we went there a lot in my childhood because my father was a big fan of the roast beef sandwich. But Taco Bell, it is.
Okay.
My number five, Auntie Anne's Pretzels. at the mall.
At the
nice.
Mall.
Good pull.
Come
good
on.
Pull.
Wow. Right? That's a good workaround. Like I didn't like consider like your Panda Express, that sort of thing. So that's actually creative.
Or as a non-conformist.
a quick story about this. We at Syracuse, they gave us all gift certificates. Everybody got a $50 Visa gift card from the school in order to spur investment, and we were supposed to spend it downtown. And so our RAs made all these plans. We were going to go to like downtown bookstores or whatever. And so we just took the money, and I went to the mall to go see The Dark Knight, and I just bought $50 worth of Auntie Anne's pretzels for all my friends on the debit card. So we were just like, here's $50 and give us as many Auntie Anne's pretzels.
How
as
many
we
was it? Do you remember?
I mean, there was like 7 bags full of Auntie Anne's pretzels. It was amazing. It was still probably the greatest meal that I've ever had.
I put Burger King on the list just because I liked the Whopper when I was a kid. Like that was the one thing. I said this before. I'm not wild about their fries. I think definitely behind Wendy's fries. Absolutely behind McDonald's fries. But the Whopper is sort of like an old classic, you know. So that's why they made the cut on my list.
They fell off my list after they discontinued the Rodeo Burger.
Oh, the Rodeo Burger was pretty good.
Fantastic.
Brandon, your thoughts?
I'm going to give Connor this round right here.
Wow.
Annie Ann's, that's a good one.
You got to give it to him for creativity, too. That's outside the box.
Oh, yeah. That was something I was not thinking of.
All right, my number 4, Boston Market. Now, this may be a little specific. I don't know if this was like even nationwide when I was that age.
We
right?
had a Boston
it's all,
Market.
It's all over the place now. I felt like you could go in there and it was like kind of like a miniature Thanksgiving dinner, right? Like you got like the mashed potatoes, you get sweet potatoes, like you get the stuffing, you get the mac and cheese. I loved going to Boston Market just because it was like almost like a miniature version of Thanksgiving dinner with chicken substituted for the turkey.
I went with McDonald's. I know it might be a slightly low ranking, but really there's just other restaurants that exceeded McDonald's.
My number 4 is Pizza Hut, specifically because, as we mentioned earlier, the Pizza Hut buffet. They had their own super bar, and there was nothing like the Pizza Hut buffet. I mean, as Jenny told me before the show, I wasn't wrong. It wasn't pie. It was actually blueberry pizza.
It was thin crust pizza.
Thin crust pizza with
absolutely.
Like blueberries
I
on
hope
it.
That your friends from high school are listening to this.
Yes.
When they corrected you saying that the blueberry dessert pizza was pie, they were incorrect. Connor Orr was correct.
It is a blueberry,
pizza.
But yeah, they had all the pizzas laid out. So you were not just, you were not
You're
confined
not
to one.
You don't have to make a decision beforehand. You can make it on the fly.
So good. So good.
Brandon?
I am going to give this one to you, Albert.
Thank you.
Boston Market, top notch.
Good selection.
Pretty solid. All right, number 3, I've got McDonald's here. I mean, look, I said it to Connor before the show. Obviously, we talked about this a lot before the show, but I said to Connor before the show, because he went to McDonald's this weekend, that even though, like, as an adult, you shouldn't be eating there very often, right? Like, as an adult, like, you feel guilty when you go there. And you know it's like the quality of it isn't great. It still tastes really good.
I want to remove the stigma from that because, you know, we're under no illusion that this is a health spa. You know what I mean? We're going to scratch an itch, you know? And there's worse things that we could be doing.
They also have salads.
Don't they?
They do have salads.
I went into a McDonald's, though, like this was fairly recently. And I can't remember where it was, but they had the calories up. Like, don't do that, McDonald's. Like,
you have to.
Like, why? Why? Like, why are they doing that? But they don't do that to us. Like, I didn't go into McDonald's to count calories. I didn't go into McDonald's. If somebody wants that, like, give them, like, a pamphlet or something. Like, when I go into McDonald's, I don't want to have to think about how many calories I'm taking in.
What happened to the McDonald's Monopoly promotion?
Oh, that was great, wasn't it?
That was great.
That was great.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. That was an awesome idea. Jenny, who's number 3 for you?
I went with Pizza Hut here for the same reason that Connor described.
Because of the buffet.
Yeah, we would go there all the time. And I thought when I was little, I thought it was actually called Pizza Hot because of the ambiguous font on the roof. I mean, we're talking like very young here. But I thought the font was a little ambiguous. Although looking back, that's probably not the case. It probably is very clearly
How old were you when you figured that out?
I think I remember very clearly being like 4 or 5 and thinking it was Pizza Hot.
I did Wendy's for 3. Checks a lot of boxes. Chicken nuggets, Frosties, spicy chicken sandwich. I mean, you can't go wrong there.
I mean, I think it's kind of hard to have a bad meal at Wendy's.
I agree.
You would have to work to have a bad meal at Wendy's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brandon?
Connor knows my heart very well. I'm going to have to give this one to him.
All right, number two.
I think I just know fast food too well.
Number two for me is Wendy's. I think it's clearly, like, of that burger fast food genre, I think I probably agree with you here. Like, I think this is probably what you were getting at. I don't know what you're going to have number one or number two, but to me, like, Wendy's is sort of a cut above Burger King or McDonald's. Like, you feel like you're eating a higher quality of food. I think McDonald's still has the edge on fries. Like, I think McDonald's still has the fries of the best fries of all the fast food places. But Wendy's, you just feel like you're eating a higher quality burger, a higher quality chicken sandwich. And so I got Wendy's at number two.
I also have Wendy's at number two. Big fan of the baked potato and the chili. And, you know, with the baked potato, you get the little sour cream, you know, in the uniquely shaped container
yep.
that squeezes out.
So,
a lot of fun.
So even though the Super Bar was the inspiration for this, and even though
we already covered the Super Bar,
yeah, but you have them number two and not number one, which is interesting.
I know, you know, I had a late addition for number one.
Okay,
oh,
Connor,
my number two is Taco Bell. I mean, Crunchwrap Supreme, like, you know, the chicken quesadilla, mm-hmm. all those like fluorescent colors of Mountain Dew. I mean, I yep. feel like that's a hard thing. And they're opening up a boutique hotel in Phoenix.
A Taco Bell hotel?
Yeah, Taco Bell hotel. And they're going to be
Cantina?
Bell
is it the Cantina?
Yeah.
Now they're branding it as a Cantina, I
yeah.
think.
What's
yeah.
the name of the hotel?
I don't know.
This is...
But, you know, it's a lot of... You know, so the Bell brand
news,
is growing.
Yeah.
It's on the rise.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What do we got, Brandon?
I'm going to have to give it to Albert and Jenny because Taco Bell is just not... It doesn't hit for me.
So that's
it just
like
work
three
for
votes
me.
For Wendy's. Brandon loves Wendy's.
We know what his number one would
be. I'm sorry, Connor. Taco
no,
Bell
okay.
just can't
that's
be
okay.
up there.
Yeah,
mm-mm.
I totally understand.
We're with Rex Chapman on this one. Okay, so I think we're all going to have curveballs here. So I'll throw the first one. My number one, KFC Taco Bell.
Ooh, oh, the combo
place. Yep.
Ooh,
now,
that was wily.
Like, I remember when I think it was like when I was a teenager when the combos started popping up around where I lived. And I just remember, like, you go in there and you would, like, you could mix it up, you know, and I just like you get like either the chicken fingers, whatever they call those things, and tacos, or you get like a quesadilla and like a chicken meal. Like, it was KFC Taco Bell opening, like the combo places opening was just, I think, I feel like it was like a more significant moment in my teenage years than it should have been. Fantastic. So KFC Taco Bell is my number one.
I was privately very, very concerned that you were going to drop like a Long John Silver's on me, and I was like,
No, but a KFC Taco, like a that's
good.
Fair. Like, that's
good.
That's allowable, right?
It's very good. Yeah. Yes, smart. I went with Dairy Queen.
that's a good one.
Dairy Queen's a good
that's
one.
That's a great
Dairy
one.
Queen.
That is a great one.
You can just get everything in one place. You know, the dipped.
They usually
cones
have
the cherry
the
and
picnic tables outside.
Picnic tables outside. In our Dairy Queen, we had this great one that was next to the place where I used to take dance lessons. So we would go after dance. A lot of my food is related to activities, apparently. When I was in my middle school, they had a closed part of the Dairy Queen because a bear ran through the restaurant.
A bear?
A bear. You know, because I grew up in State College, which is, you know, rural Pennsylvania. But when they were building up different parts of town, they displaced the bear. So the bear ran through the restaurant. They had to rebuild part of the Dairy Queen. But
once all those blizzards.
I mean, blizzards. You know, my mom said the only time that she ate a full, the Brownie Delight was when she was pregnant with me, which was kind of strange because I ate several full Brownie Delights as a child.
I think Dairy Queen's another one of those places where I've seen the calories on the thing, which is just...
Dilly bars.
It's just like you don't want to see the calories next to the... When you go to like a place like this, you know what you're doing to yourself. Like, you don't need a reminder of what you're doing to yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like those like Dairy Queen, I remember like the calorie numbers next to those like Dairy Queen sundaes are frightening.
They are frightening. The last thing I will say on Dairy Queen is we still celebrate major holidays with the Dairy Queen cake or cupcakes.
For sure.
My dad's birthday, we just had the Dairy Queen cupcakes. The layers, you know, sometimes you get the cherry at the bottom in between the brown, they have the crumbles. I mean, just really... Really, a cut above.
Dairy Queen's a good one. All right.
I have McDonald's as number one. I mean, you know, obviously.
Just a sucker for the classics.
I mean, you know, I don't think, I just think I have my order perfected at this point. Like, you know, everything is down, you know, so it's.
What's
just,
your order?
So my wife and I get the two hamburgers meal, right? And then she gets the 10-piece chicken nuggets. No cheese.
No cheese.
Two hamburgers a meal, and then she gets the 10-piece chicken nugget, and then we kind of like, she gets a burger, I get a few nuggets, and then, you know, and then that way everybody's happy, you know, you mix it up. Mm-hmm. However, if they don't have honey, I need honey, pure honey, not honey mustard, like honey that you put
that
in
was
the nuggets.
That was my favorite as well, yeah.
For the chicken nuggets. And a lot of, I find now that a lot of the younger kids that are working at McDonald's don't understand that. Yeah. It's like not something that they get, and they just say, "Oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about," and they just put honey mustard in my
bag. So see, I would tend to like I don't know if you guys are this way, but I would go through like phases with the sauces for chicken nuggets.
I always stuck with honey as well.
So I went with like I had a honey mustard. No, they didn't even have a honey mustard. There it was
barbecue.
Hot mustard.
Oh,
hot mustard. The hot mustard was pretty good. They had barbecue. The sweet and sour was
sweet
the one.
Sweet and sour.
That
I
went
sometimes
to that one a lot.
I would mix it up with that as a kid.
The year that Mulan came out, they had Szechuan sauce.
Did they?
Yeah.
Wow.
As I think cross, I sort
as a,
of remember
as a promotion.
That.
Yeah,
yeah I sort
really
of
cool.
remember that. How about that?
Some no more.
Cultural experience there at McDonald's.
That's right. Yeah, expanding our horizons. new food products.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not just the all-American restaurant. You can also expand your horizons at McDonald's. Okay, we're going to jump into the news now. And I'll kick it off. News item number one. This is what everybody's been talking about for the last 2 weeks. The Jets interviews are off and running. The team faces an uphill challenge as they attempt to. And I'm going to mention here that Connor wrote these and I haven't read them yet. So if I start laughing or anything like that, that's why. The team faces an uphill challenge as they attempt to creatively subvert the Rooney Rule while also convincing someone friendly with Adam Gase to take the job. Will this end up succeeding, or will the Jets just wish they had held on to old wishy-washy McCagden for another year? Look, I think the one way out of this is to hire the guy that everybody has connected to them the whole time, and that's Joe Douglas, who has a pre-existing relationship with Adam Gase, who's really well-respected, who can build a good scouting staff. The Rooney Rule thing here is tricky. This is just one of those that's like really... because his name was out there so early.
So early.
So early. Like well before the firing happened. The firing had been shot down. The idea that he was going to be fired had been shot down several times. His name was out there before that. And so... that's where this one is really, really gets interesting.
Yeah, I agree with our colleague Jonathan Jones wrote a great piece kind of encouraging people to be aware of that if you're interviewing for the job. I mean, if something like that happens, don't interview. I mean, don't set yourself up to be bulldozed, you know, much like the Raiders did when they hired John Gruden. I mean, there were legitimate sham interviews. I mean, just sham interviews that were constructed.
So
there.
Here's the question, though. Like, if you know who you're going to hire, right? Like, if you know, like, because I think any like a lot of organizations would just have lists, right? Like, and it would be like, here's our first guy. Like, how do you force someone to have an open process when there's someone they were targeting all along? Like, that's the question I have. Like, that's what makes it hard. It's like, I think hiring John Gruden is different than, say, hiring Zach Taylor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think hiring, like, it's just, there are certain guys that are out there where it's like, okay, like this guy is like, it's not even, the guy isn't winning the job, the team's recruiting the guy. And I think those are the ones where it gets a little tricky. Now, this is like a little bit of a gray area because Joe Douglas is really well respected, but he's not like on the level of a Super Bowl winning coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where sort of there could be moving parts with the Rooney Rule that makes it a little more difficult. Like I think the Rooney Rule was put in place to make sure that there's a quality in searches like the Bengals search for Zach Taylor. I think the ones where it's more difficult is where like the Raiders have been trying to get John Gruden to take that job for 5 years. So it's like, how does that not become you know what I'm saying? Like that's a little bit more difficult. And I wonder if there's a way to fix that. Like, cause I don't know what the answer is there.
The Rooney Rule is not perfect. And I think we have seen with coaching searches that there are minority coaches who will refuse to take an interview at a place unless another minority has been interviewed before them so that they know that it's not a Rooney Rule interview. But that's also something that you can do perhaps your second or third year in the process when you feel like you have a little bit more sway and you've interviewed before. It's not the first time you've interviewed. So it's a difficult question to answer, right? Because if you've never interviewed for a general manager job before and you go into this knowing that it's a sham interview, How do you, you know, I think everyone would have a different answer to that question, yeah. right? There's going to be some people that are going to say, it's a chance for me to get in front of an owner, to practice interviewing, to and make it's my connections.
Name, my name getting in the cycle.
My name getting in the cycle. Because there are definitely cases where, you know, and the Jets case is not one of them because there's not a consultant involved. And I think these consultants involved is generally a bad idea. But mm-hmm. a lot of times if you interview with the team and there is a consultant involved, there's a good chance that consultant might be involved with another team. And then they say, hey, when we had this opening, I remember this guy and he was really good. And maybe you would, you know, really be a front runner for another job as a result right. of that.
Or like I give, like, I think Brian Flores is a good example of this. Like, I'd say 18 months ago, no one was thinking of him as like a head coaching candidate. He interviewed in Arizona. Steve Wilks wound up getting the job right now. That's different. Obviously, it's not Brian Flores. It wasn't a sham interview, but like he was just in the process. Right. And it turns out like he was number two for that job. And then word got around how well he interviewed there. Right. And so by doing that interview, like word just kind of got out there that like he interviewed really well. This is an impressive guy. And now all of a sudden, I mean, he interviewed, what, four different places and got a job the next year. And so that's the other piece of it, too. Like, I think that that's sort of the intention of it, too, right, is to get guys opportunities earlier so, you know, like their name gets into the mix and all of that. And I don't think it's a – I don't know. That part of it is just like for someone like Champ Kelly who hasn't had his name connected to GM openings yet, like it can be a positive exercise to go through that, you know?
My argument would be that, you know, I've talked to Tony Dungy a lot about this and you know, he had cite, you know, Art Rooney, the guy who created the rule, obviously, yep. you know, I mean, I think the rule, we just need to rethink why they instilled it in the first place, right? It's not a speed bump. It's like, it's exactly why, like if you're the Jets right now, you're already three quarters of the way down the road with somebody and the Rooney rule is designed for you to stop and say, huh, why am I here with this guy right now? You know what I mean? Why don't I take a step back? Why don't I, you know, extend the sure. process and just think about things for a second, you know? And I think that the rule was designed to sort of, to just at least widen people's ideas,
yeah.
widen people's thoughts, widen people's perspectives. But, I mean, the fact that Joe Douglas's name was out there before McKagnum is even fired kind of makes it seem like the Jets are three quarters of the way down the road with this guy,
right.
and they're going to try to grab him if they
and,
can.
And I wonder if they're, and I'm just sort of thinking out loud here, I'm wondering if there's a way, if you really are against guys going in when the job someone else is already, right? Like, if you really are against a guy going, I think it was, who was it that interviewed for the Raider job?
T. Martin.
So if you're really against like a guy going in and interviewing, like that sort of thing happening, I wonder if there's a way to like have a team designate a target, you know what I mean? And say, like, if you really want to end this, like if you really want to make this legitimate above board and separate one thing from another, right? Then I wonder if there's a way where you say, a team can say, we're targeting this guy, and then it becomes like an exclusive negotiating thing, right? Like where not only that coach is talking to the team, that team can't talk to anybody else. You know what I mean? Like, and then then one way or another, either gets done or it doesn't happen. Like it gets done or it doesn't happen, and then either they have their coach or they move on, and then they're subject to the rule. Does that make sense?
I think, you know, Connor, getting, like, your point was a good one. We should get back to what the rule was designed for, right? And I think a lot of times what it's become now is just this formality that you have to check. And I think, you know, that's why we're getting worse, I think, in terms of positions of leadership and a lack of, you know, minority voices in those roles. And I think anytime you have a disparity in who's getting certain jobs, there's always this catch-up period. You know, you see this with female coaches and trying to grow more of a pipeline for female coaches, and they're that, you know, they're creating deliberate opportunities for women to get jobs, and no one likes to be in that position, right? Like,
right.
no one wants to feel like you're getting a job because of mm-hmm. some identifying feature about you. But that's sort of sometimes what you have to do to catch up the pipeline. It's very different for minorities because there are already people in leadership roles that would be great for the top positions that aren't being considered for them. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, it's like a willful ignorance, I think. So I think just reminding what the rule is for and keeping
yeah.
that in mind early on when you're thinking about candidates. Whereas, but the problem is, yeah, when a target's out there, then it does become this sense of just checking a box and this catch up.
Yeah, I just don't think like they're not all the same. You know what I mean? Like Gruden, Mike Shanahan, when he was out there in 2010 and the Redskins were clearly going, like, there's just, they're there are those, which is almost like an active recruitment of a coach, right? Like when Chip Kelly was, like the Eagles going after Chip Kelly, that's different than like, all right, like 10 guys are going to come in and interview and we're going to pick one.
But maybe if the Eagles had spent more time saying, why are we three quarters of the road down, the way down the road with Chip Kelly? You know, to tie this in full circle, it would be as if Jenny, as a young person in state college, went into the Wendy's Super Bar for the first time and said, I'm only getting pasta, you know, and then just walked past the entire rest of the superfood bar, and then we might have never had this conversation. Mm-hmm. She kept an open mind. She started mixing ground beef and sour cream and chocolate vanilla pudding and came up with this cornucopia of excellent food, you know.
And it's a really important memory in my childhood, having all of those options to eat from off of my plate.
I think we just solved it. I think we just solved the world's problem.
Stop at the pasta bar, or stop at the stop at the Mexican fiesta, not just the pasta bar.
Yeah, just give it a look.
And I think what you're talking about, I think what you're talking about too, Jenny, like I think the maybe the best example of it working is probably Pittsburgh in 2007, right? Like when I think everybody assumed, because things had been so good there, Bill Cowher had won a Super Bowl 2 years earlier, they were either going to hire Ken Whisenhunt or Russ Grimm, the offensive coordinator, assistant head coach at the time. And everybody, I can still remember this vividly, like everyone said, like it's either one or the other, and then one of those two guys is going to wind up getting the Arizona job, because there was that feeling that like one was going to wind up in one place, one was going to wind up in the other place. And then Tomlin comes in and Tomlin wins the job. Like that's the Rooney Rule working, right? I don't know if you're going to be in a situation like the Gruden Raiders situation where it's just, I mean, like the owner had a hard on for him. Like there's no other way to put this. And like he was getting, like if Gruden said yes, like he was going to get that job no matter who the head coach was at the time. It's just, those are different things.
And maybe 3 years later, he'll say, why didn't I take a step back?
Yeah.
Segwaying into news number topic two. Number two, John Gruden's football roadshow continues with the signing of Richie Incognito to his already mercurial gumbo. The longtime television star and current Raiders head coach has added the subject of a 2014 investigation into racist and sexual harassment of former teammates and staffers. This after cutting Kleche Osemele, who plays the same position. When have we seen this work, right? I mean, and we can parse the language however we want. I mean, this is going to be Richie Incognito, Vontaze Burfict, Antonio Brown. I mean, when have we seen like a coach outside of maybe Bill Belichick, who was established by the time that he had that penchant for grabbing mercurial stars and aligning them into this culture? There is no culture developed here.
I think it's like, so to me, it's like, Richie and Vontaze Burfict are in one category. You're buying so low on them that if it's like, if it doesn't work, they cut those guys. You know what I mean? Like, and that actually is a Belichick move. Is like buying super low on guys, right? Like that. You remember the summer where they traded for Chad Johnson and Albert Hainsworth on back-to-back days? Like they bought super low on those guys. And so I feel like with Incognito and with Burfict, it's like you're buying low on guys, and if it works out, it works out. But if it doesn't, you can just cut them. Brown's different because you paid for him, you know? And so I think that they're sort of two different things. I mean, the other part of this that's interesting is just, look, I've talked to Mike Mayock about this a bunch. They emphasized culture to such an insane degree in the draft, right? Like in drafting Cleveland Farrell fourth overall, which no one expected, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Abram, all these character guys, right? Like all these guys who are good, strong team leaders. And it's just like the thing I got with this is that this sort of like what they've done this offseason, like on the veteran side, has sort of flown in the face of that.
Yeah, you're challenging all these guys to make up the weight of that. And all these young guys, I mean, you know, even if they're young or even if they might not be in the locker room forever, Richie Incognito is going to be in that room. Vontaze Burfict is going to be in that room around those guys. Yeah. You know, I don't
totally.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems to me to be opposite of what's going on in Miami, right? Where they really are kind of trying to start over with. Flushing out stuff. And Oakland, they're just trying to jam a roster together.
And you wonder if it's like with, I mean, Gruden just, like, because Gruden's a little older now, because Mike is, I think, 60. Like, there is that element, like, where it's like, do they really want to go through a long process, you know? And is it almost one of those things where they're, like the intention is maybe to build to do a deliberate build, but then they just can't help themselves when like there's instant help out there.
That's,
you know what I'm
exactly
saying?
What it seems like. That's like the best summary I've heard.
I mean, it just
this
feels
has been Gruden's MO for his entire coaching career. Like he has never developed anyone.
Right.
So, like,
I mean,
why is he going to start?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he's always had older quarterbacks and all of that. Yeah. So maybe this works. I mean, look, if Fridge's the player he was a couple years ago in Buffalo, and Trent Brown works out, and this is a lot of ifs, Colton Miller works out, like all of a sudden they've got a really good offensive line because Rodney Hudson's already there, and Jackson's there. Like they've got the makings of a pretty good team, but it's like one of those things. Like a lot of things have to go right. Like a lot of things that haven't gone right in the past have to go right now.
I'm skeptical. I've joined Orr in the skepticism.
You're skeptical.
Bringing him on over. Club is open.
He was, and you're like the charter member of that club too.
Yes, I'm the founder. I am the CEO.
That's right.
Yeah, but we're taking applications.
Okay.
So.
Jenny, news item number three.
Oh boy.
Here we go.
Following the latest glitzy owners meeting retreat, there is still confusion as to what Sean Payton's new pass interference rule, Payton Care, wow, that's good, will look like. Is there a chance we're opening up Pandora's box and many teams will not like the taste of the sour grapes they'll have to eat?
First of all, I want to thank Connor for an accurate review of the Ritz-Carlton Key Biscayne.
Did you go to the bar? The bartender there?
The bartender. I did not go to the bar, but we ate at the little Mexican place that's right there on the beach.
Oh, it's so good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
really
empanadas
good.
Were amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
Better than Taco
I forgot
Bell?
To go to the bartender.
Better than the KFC Taco Bell mashup?
It's like close. It's close. Yeah. I don't want to say anything I'm going to regret here, so I'll just kind of leave that open-ended. But good empanadas down there. I mean, look, like all we have to do to explain how we've opened up Pandora's box here is just to look at the timeline of how this happened. Right?
Absolutely. There was a swift backtrack between the last owner meeting and this one.
It goes from, okay, so just so all the listeners who don't know how this all went down, initially, the reason why they gave the full, they gave the officials control in the last 2 minutes, the way that they have control over all other penalties, right? Was because the coaches said, well, what about Hail Marys, right? Like, what about the Hail Mary play where there could be pass interference all over the place? So they said, okay, we'll give it to the officials, okay? So they vote that through at the owners' meeting, okay? Then the officials go out and they visit all these coaches, and Al Riveron or one of his proxies, like, they all go out and they visit with all the coaches. And what they're getting back from the coaches now, and Jenny, I know you talked to a couple of people about this, was, well, if it's up to the officials, is this going to turn into free throws at the end of a basketball game where officials are going to be stopping everything left and right because they're going to be paranoid about missing something? So then the officials take that back to the competition committee. The competition committee says, well, let's give it back to the coaches. So now it's going to be the only thing the coaches can challenge within the last 2 minutes. But somehow then Hail Marys are going to be exempt from that, which defining a Hail Mary, we all know what a Hail Mary is. Actually defining it on paper is kind of challenging. Like, it's not that easy to do if you think about it, right? So you've got that issue. You also have the issue of, like, the fact that coaches may now hold on to challenges because they know there could be a critical play that they're holding on to. And it's just, so again, all you have to do is go through the timeline of all of this to see it's like somebody who doesn't know how to parallel park. You know what I mean? Like, pulling into the spot and they keep pulling back and forth and back and forth and they can't quite get themselves in. Like, it's like the NFL is this car that doesn't know how to parallel park.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
That was
so
a bad
leaving,
analogy.
No, it makes sense. I don't parallel park much. So, leaving the owners' meetings, leaving the Mexican restaurant at Key Biscayne, did you feel like there was a clear sense of what the rule will look like when the season starts?
So
they empower the competition committee to change things without owner input.
Nothing's
right?
actually changed right. yet, but like right. the idea is that it's going to change. Okay. They have conference calls next week, whatever it's like between the 4th and the 6th, either the 4th and the 5th or the 5th and the 6th.
Gotcha.
They've got the conference calls. They do these by division. So I think there are 8 of them. They do them by division. They have conference calls with all the coaches, and that's when they're going to make a decision on whether or not they're going to make the change, which you anticipate they will make the change. I don't know. I mean, it's to me, they've tied themselves in a knot on this. And I think ultimately, like, where they're going to get is going to be the Sky Judge. Like, I think that's where we are in 5 years, right? Like, but I think just all these machinations to get there, it's just like it almost feels like a big waste of time.
Shocking that having someone stomp their angrily stomp their feet and shoving legislation through didn't work out, you know?
I mean, honestly, it felt like the referees were a little bit left out of the process, right? Yeah. And I think we saw that in Arizona when Al Riveron was frustrated leaving a meeting. And I think that represented the frustration that a lot of officials probably have of saying, listen, we're on the field. Yeah. We're experienced. We know how to make these calls. Everything might not be perfect. There's nothing is perfect, but the best system is the one that we have in place. And then, yeah, so, you know, this rule change is pushed through. Peyton and Goodell really got together on this one, right? And made sure that something happened at the owners' meetings. And then I think in the weeks later, people were starting to say, this is a really muddy thing. And, you know, inside of 2 minutes, how are we deciding which ones are reviewed, right? And so I think there's just a little bit more muddiness than it felt like. It felt like there was such a celebration leaving Arizona, and now there's a little bit more muddiness. I think it's probably not unlike what happened with the lowering the helmet last year, where there just became this like widespread confusion in the spring and summer.
Okay, so like that wasn't as much of a mess in the fall as we thought it was going to be.
It wasn't, correct.
So do you guys think this will be that? Like, do you think this is going to be as much of a mess in the fall as it seems like it is right now?
No, I agree. I think they'll probably get to a better point. I just think it once again sort of spotlights the flaws in the process. And the, you know, the NFL is always criticized for being reactionary, right? And I understand wanting to make a change, and there were certainly reasons for that. But I think the way that this has worked out and on the heels of sort of the messiness of last year, mm-hmm. Warrant sort of a reexamination of how things are pushed through.
I just think that this is a protracted way of getting where I think that they ultimately, which it's just like when you got so many hands in it, right?
Right, and so many people with different
opinions. You can't like streamline it, like, because there's going to be like, there's just a ton of, like, it feels like there's just a ton of obstruction being thrown in the way, you know? And like, I do think, like again, I think in 5 years we're going to get to the Sky Judge. And I thought it was really interesting that Jeffrey Lurie, who is with the coaches on wanting the Sky Judge, right? So he was the one who stood up in the middle of the meeting and brought up that fact, like, hey, my coach isn't going to, like, my coach is going to have to hang on to his challenges. Do we give him a designated challenge, you know, for the last 2 minutes of the half and the last 2 minutes of the game? Which, like, okay, so now it's outside the coach's challenge system, and you wonder then, is Lurie trying to obstruct a little bit and say, like, this is all like kind of like in a sideways, in like kind of like a different way, like throwing it like, this is all ridiculous, I'm going to show you how type of way.
I just think we're already bordering on like an officiating crisis, like a full-on officiating crisis. Like, the game is getting too fast and too difficult to officiate. Yeah. Every team's playbook contains plays that purposely subvert the rules,
yep.
And in order to like get these guys out of view, you
I think
know?
Because that like OPI is going to be a bigger problem than DPI.
Yeah, but all this, and it's like, why aren't we doing like some of the more sensible, you know, stuff out there and taking some of the weight off of these referee shoulders instead of putting like it just seems like we're continuously taxing guys with less and less men and women with less and less experience. You know, and it's just, I don't know. I think we're going to hit a crisis point.
And maybe the focus should be a little bit more on training the officials, right? And rather than like constant updates to the rule book, you know, maybe there's a little bit more time spent on development of some of these young officials.
And I actually think that's why we should have some, it's not popular to have sympathy for the officials, but if you think about this and anybody's seen, and I know you guys have too, but if you've seen like what an NFL game looks like from field
100%.
Level. 100%. Like being able to make heads and tails of what is going on out there. I don't know how coaches do it. I don't know how officials do it, because when I've seen it at that level, it just looks like a big blur.
Totally.
So I like, look, official, you have to train your eyes to see things. You have to like train yourself to see things that fast, to pick up on things. And so imagine like training your eyes to see that and see things moving at that speed and being able to catch things and everything else. And then they're changing the rules on you every year. Like, that's the other problem. You know what I mean? Like, is that it's just, it's a lot to ask the officials. And that's why, and I'll bring it back around, I do think the idea of putting someone up in the booth who is a good official, like not just some trainee, putting some guy who's an experienced official up in the booth with a TV feed available to him makes the most sense, and that's what we're going
to
get.
And I think that would be more palatable to some who are opposed to it now if in the next couple of years that you can identify a certain... I think that was the biggest resistance is who are we going to put in those jobs, and do we have enough... We don't, you know, the NFL might feel like right now they don't have enough officials to fill out a crew, right? Yeah. So to fill another position that's the most important. So I think perhaps over the next few years, that should be the focus. How do we develop enough people that can sit in 16 stadiums and be a sky judge?
Yeah. And I mean, maybe it's working with the college. I would think it might be working with the college conferences. That might be a way to do it, to like just create something where like, where they're being trained a certain way and they're being and they're all like there's a, because that's the pipeline, right? Like a lot of these guys are coming from the college game, and so maybe there's a way to create a pipeline there. I don't know. All right, news topic number 4: Alvin Kamara, Ted Ginn, Tariq Cohen, Mark Ingram, Trey Waynes, Dominic Rogers, Cromartie, Kevin Byard, Buda Baker, and the Jets, Robbie Anderson, will be racing for some reason. Who do you think will win, and who would win a foot race between everyone on the MMQB podcast?
Wow.
First off, why are they racing? Because you had brought this up as a suggested topic. Why are
Did you look at it?
Like, why are they running against each other?
Like, I actually missed the initial news of this, and then I saw it somewhere. I'm like, is this real? And then I saw a news story. There was an AP story on it, so I was like, holy crap.
When and how are they, like, how
it's
are
the
they racing?
June.
And are they all going to be
it's
on a 40
yard dash? I don't know. I haven't looked at the details, but it seems like every one of their teams would be like, "What the hell are you doing?"
Yeah, like absolutely not. Yeah, like don't pull a hamstring.
Right, right. Like that would seem like it.
Are
would
they
be,
racing for money?
I would maybe some. You know what? Because none of us did our research, I'm going to Google it right now.
I think it's just better for me to just complain loudly about it and ask questions that I hope that people.
I mean,
it'd
be entertaining, right? Okay, so here you go. This is from Forbes.com. I believe this is an aggregator over there. Okay, some of the NFL's fastest players will take their wheels for a spin on June 29th. That's when some of the league's speediest players are set to compete in a 40-yard race, according to NFL reporter Dov Kleiman. I don't know if he's a reporter. The competition is being hosted by 40 Yards of Gold, a group that specializes in showing off speed on the gridiron. Obviously, these are some of the NFL's fastest players. I've never heard of it.
This all feels rudderless.
But who has the quicker step? Father time and injuries may have slowed some of these guys over the years, but here's how the aforementioned names did in the 40-yard dash prior to being drafted. The fastest dash time of these guys is Trey Waynes, 4.31. Okay, so yeah, it looks like Ginn is going to get the opportunity thanks to 40 Yards of Gold. If any of the other participants are willing to match his bet, someone is going to walk away from the contest $10,000 richer, which for $10,000.
Okay, so this is a continuation of him saying if anyone can beat him in a foot race, he'll give him $10,000.
I guess so, yeah. Did he say that?
There was,
did he say that during the season or something?
It was recently. Okay, yeah, it was like a Twitter thing.
Okay, so because Ted Ginn was like, just for those who don't know now, he's older now. He's 34, I think. But he was like an Olympic-level sprinter in high school. Would have had
Yeah,
he was like a potential qualifier for the 2008 Olympic team. So that's why he's like pounds his chest about running really fast. I mean, I'll watch this.
I will too, but
I'll watch this.
I feel like you need to alter the format, right? Because I'm not going to watch like 20 guys just do the 40 one after the other after the other after the other, and I don't think it would be entertaining to watch 10 guys race only 40 yards either, right? Because I feel like that's not a good representation of total speed, right? Like,
so
I would
watch should be the 110.
I would watch him do a 110.
Yeah,
I think I would watch them all do 110. I don't know.
I don't think any of us are going to be watching anything because I think their teams are going to be
there's
like...
There's a 0% chance.
Yeah, I don't think this is actually... Yeah.
Yeah, do you think John Harbaugh is letting Mark Ingram run a 40-yard dash for $10,000?
No, on to the
why
second
is Mark
half
Ingram
of
in
this.
It?
Yeah, well...
Well, they have the 40 times here, so his 40 time was 4.62. Like, if you're Mark Ingram, why would you even want to be involved in
maybe
this?
Maybe to correct a wrong. Maybe he felt
maybe
like
right
he didn't
wrong,
perform
yeah
as well
that's
as
a good
he
point
should have back
that's
in
a fair
day
point. I don't know who would win of the three of us. I don't know if Brandon, I don't know how fast you are. I one time broke 5 in the 40. I ran like a 4.9 when I was in high school. I don't think I could come close to that again. I'm scared to see what my 40 time would be right now.
Wow, I've never been timed.
At the Abington Heights Comet Combine in 2006, I ran the 40, and then I ran it again, and then I asked my coach what the time was, and all he said was, you should consider unhitching the trailer. So my guess was 5+.
Okay, so Albert has the early lead right now.
Yeah, I would not have the lead. At 39 years old, I'm not...
I don't think I'm winning anything either.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I make no promises as far as what I could
you
run.
Know who would, you know who would win? Riley the dog.
Yes.
Riley would win,
Riley the dog. The office dog. Yep. She would definitely beat us all.
Okay, who wants to take number five?
I got it. While the Combine will remain in Indianapolis for another few seasons, there seems to be a push to monetize the various jumping, bench pressing, and other meat market minutiae. Will the NFL devour the Combine's soul before eventually shipping it off to Los Angeles?
So I talked to Jeff Foster, who runs the Combine, about this last week, and it feels like there's a certain resignation. You know, like, he definitely wanted it to stay in Indianapolis, and their point has always been, Jenny, I think you've done stories on this, like the medical part of it will be incredibly difficult to recreate somewhere else. But I think the owners, and he said this, the owners have looked at what's happened with the draft and how they've been able to grow the draft, and maybe they can't grow the draft, the combine, you know, in the same way they grow the draft, but they do think that they can grow it. And so I think, you know, it's hard to imagine that Indianapolis is going to be able to hold on to this long term. I hope they do, because it makes the most sense, and it'd be hard to recreate what they've got in Indianapolis somewhere else beyond just the medical part of it. But it feels like this is just sort of a fait accompli, and I know Dallas and LA have already asked for it.
It feels inevitable to get sucked into the industrial complex that is the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really going to stink, because I have a lot of good places that I like to eat there. You know, Napoli's pizza. Like, when else am I going to go to Napoli's if I don't go to the Combine? You know,
I'm a big fan of that Steak and Shake. It's the only place I eat Steak and Shake anymore is in Indianapolis.
Could have been a contender for the...
You know what's underrated is there's that Italian place in the JW.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay.
It's an underrated. I feel like
it's properly rated.
Yeah.
I think it's
I'm
pretty
with
good.
You.
I think
a
it's pretty good.
Steak and Shake would be on my dad's rating when he used to joke that he would go
Jim?
In there.
Jim's a big Steak and Shake guy.
Jim, you know, there was a Steak and Shake in Danville, and he used to joke that they would go in and mix ketchup with hot water to make tomato soup. You know, one of those, like, I walk 6 miles to school every day type things. The Steak and Shake is near the Custard Cup, which is not a chain but a Danville original favorite. But you know, it would be interesting, because it's, you know, part of the great you know, setting of the Combine is just that, you know, everyone's just so close, and that's good for us, but it's also good for teams and agents, and
that's,
you know,
the part of it that I think
so,
like,
in LA, like, that's gonna be hard to recreate, because there aren't that many hotels in like a 2 mile, like in Indy everything's in like a 2 mile square radius, if that.
Yeah, and I think that part of it, like, the Combine is more, and you wonder if there are certain owners that, there aren't that many owners. Like, how many owners actually go to the Combine? Like, Jerry's there. I think I saw Christopher Johnson there this year. Like, there aren't very many owners.
The ones who are on the competition committee.
Right.
Yeah.
There just aren't a lot of them, right? And so you wonder if they don't have a full idea of what this really is. And it's not just 40s and bench press and medical and interviews. It's a convention. You know, let's call it what it is. Free agent deals are getting done there. Groundwork is being laid for trades. You're starting to, like, it's just, there's so much that happens there that would be, it would be impossible to recreate that if everybody's waking up in the morning and getting in a cab and going to the stadium, right?
Yeah, I'm just interested to see, because, I mean, to me, LA is overwhelming, so maybe I'm the wrong person to be talking about this, but everything in LA just seems like, oh my God, where are you going? There's like, you know, a million
it's
places
so spread
to stay.
Out. Yeah.
Right.
It takes forever to get anywhere.
And maybe it's possible, I guess, that Kroenke is going to build enough infrastructure on this campus in Inglewood. It just seems unlikely to me, because of the amount of hotels that there are in Indianapolis, right? Like, I don't know. It just feels like there's going to be at least a part of that huge crowd that's in Indianapolis every February that would have to be way off site in Los Angeles, right? I might be wrong about that, but it feels that way.
And maybe some of that is good. I mean, you know, I think that there's certainly a segment of the coaching population, definitely some of the older coaches that I've talked to, who miss sort of the soul of the combine, the fact that they could treat it like it was a little bit of a trade show, and they could go out and they could drink and they wouldn't have to worry about, you know, there are stories of, you know, whatever, Bum Phillips playing the piano at the bar and singing and, like, you know, having all his friends there. Mm-hmm. And there's an element of that that you can't do anymore, right? I mean, because, you know.
Because it's, of, like, basically cell phones, yeah.
Cell phones and the increase in reporters.
The
and,
new, yeah. newfangled innovation of the cell yeah. phone has changed a lot of things in this modern world.
Is it a smartphone? Is that better, Jay? Smartphone.
But I saw it in L.A., you could certainly do that, right? You could hide somewhere. You could do more stuff out of sight. You wouldn't have to worry about, yeah. you know, sitting next to someone in your hotel lobby getting free agent deals that, done. You know?
I'd be an expert Connor on
I do think, like, the idea of bumping into people, though, like, that's sort of a huge part of the combine, too. Like, at least, and maybe it's just me talking, but I feel like for everybody, like, there's an element there of bumping into people that, like, would be, that I think is really beneficial to a lot of people. And I'm not just talking about reporters. I think it's beneficial for football people, too, that you would take away.
I'm 100% pro in Indy, you know? If they move this, I'll be very sad.
Leave it in Indy.
Please.
Leave it in Indy. All right, guys. Wait. We got one more thing. Jenny?
We forgot to have Brandon pick a winner for the number one ranking of our fast food restaurants.
All right.
Well, the last one, Jenny won that round.
And see, it's as if I knew I was going to win that round.
So with that being said, I gave each of you two wins, and for the tiebreaker, I need to know from each of you which is the best fast food pizza place.
Hmm. So are the rules still applying? Like, it has to be a place that we went. So it has to be a chain, right? Right,
yeah.
Ben?
Yeah.
It has to be a chain. Does it have to be a place that we ate at before we went to college?
No.
No. Okay, so it could be any place now. But it has to be a chain.
Has to be a chain.
National chain? Can't be a local
yes.
chain, right? Okay.
National chain.
National chain. All right.
This is tough.
We're really on a spot here.
This is tough because the best pizza places are definitely, like, local pizza places, right?
Right.
That's fair.
I'm just going to stick with Pizza Hut because of the pizza buffet and the nostalgia attached.
Pizza Hut was the only pizza place that's on my list.
Uh-huh.
However, but specifically because of the buffet. But if Brandon is asking for the best fast food pizza place, you know, I would say maybe, like, Little Caesars. Like, you would go back to, like,
Hot and Ready.
Well, now their business is Hot and Ready, but back in the day it was like Pizza. I mean, they were the original, like, you know, watching football on Saturdays and Sundays pizza place.
So the reason I asked him, like, whether or not it's national was because, like, for me, it would have been Papa Gino's, which was, I think, just Massachusetts, right?
No, so, can't do that.
So Papa Gino's would have been my pick. Now that but since we set that parameter, so I think I'm going to go off the board here and go into Connor's territory. That's the food court. How about Sbarro?
Oh, God.
Sbarro pizza's
pull.
Pretty
no.
good. Sbarro pizza's not bad. Like, the pizza
on
there
what
is...
what planet?
The pizza there is not bad.
Oh, it's the worst.
Sbarro, it's like, look, like, so you have Pizza Hut, you have Sbarro. Papa John's is not bad, even though the owner of it is a frickin'... like separate of like who the guy who runs it. Like, Papa John's is pretty good.
I would say if you're asking me... And you're not, but if you were to ask me as a connoisseur of these kind of things, who in recent years has put the most effort into bettering the product as a whole, I would say Domino's has made leaps and bounds.
Is Domino's better now?
Domino's does not taste like cardboard anymore.
Really?
Yeah. They've done like
most improved category.
They definitely win most improved, but I would say...
Domino's had an awesome mascot back in the day, too. What was that guy's name? He, like, looked like an elf.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I
you guys
know
remember, like,
yeah, yeah.
Nemo or something like that?
Yeah.
Hold on. All right, Brandon, who has won this round? Or the tiebreaker, excuse me.
Okay, so Connor, you picked Little Caesars.
Yeah.
Jenny, you picked Pizza Hut.
Yes.
And Albert, you picked Sbarro.
Sbarro.
Here's the Domino's mascot, by the way.
Oh, that's a good one.
I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the winner is...
Noid was his name, by the way.
Albert.
Yes.
Oh my
yes,
God. Wow. No. Wow, that was a stunning upset.
The pizza at Sbarro's is okay, but no, everything else at Sbarro's is great.
Oh, the pizza at Sbarro's is fine.
I like everything, and I don't like the pizza at Sbarro's.
Albert, really? Congratulations.
Thank you.
This loss stings, but well earned.
This is a great honor.
God damn it.
I think they need to take me to the Super Bar as a result, as a reward.
Little
for this.
Caesars, find me on Twitter.
And to be Wait. Honest, kind of looking like he was going to win, but. Albert, you those last couple of selections,
came in strong.
Man, you came in strong at the end.
God.
I think like Brandon too. I think like three of the points that Brandon gave of like the total nine points or something. Three I think were for Wendy's. So we know where you're at.
We're gonna take Brandon to Wendy's is what we're trying.
We gotta
to say.
Take we gotta take. Brandon
I
kind of
want Wendy's.
I'll be very happy with that.
All right, thanks guys. All right, there's no easy way to transition from that over to the six-pack, but we'll give it a shot. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. If I pick yours, you get an answer here. You get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there for you. Question number one from David Schmidt. That's at DaSlappy77. Should the Browns sign Gerald McCoy? And I'm going to say yes to this question. Ideally, you want a defensive line group that is going to rotate players through. They've got Sheldon Richardson. They've got Larry Ogunjobi. They've got Myles Garrett. It's a really, really strong frontline group, but they can use a little depth. And right now they're in that window where they've got their quarterback on a rookie deal and are going to have him on a rookie deal for at least the next 2 years, which creates cap space for them to do things like this. And you go back to when Seattle had Russell Wilson on a rookie deal, what'd they do? Well, remember they brought in Cliff Averill. They brought in Michael Bennett. You can't have enough good defensive linemen. If the Browns see fit to go and get Gerald McCoy right now, they got the flexibility to do it. I would do it if I were them. Question number two, this is from Biscuit Needs His Own Show. At new JV Bell 270, can Lamar Jackson take that next step and make the Baltimore Ravens a contender? Well, I would say they were a contender last year based on the fact that they made the playoffs. He played well. I think a lot of this is going to be kind of the balance between what they want to do with their new offense. And Greg Roman, one of the reasons he was promoted was because of how creative he is in the running game and his ability to take advantage of Lamar Jackson's legs. So there's the balance between that and Lamar Jackson's growth as a quarterback, because ultimately that's what's going to protect him. And so you don't want to go overboard with having your quarterback as a runner, but you also want to be able to take advantage of what he can do in that element of the game, because it's going to create opportunities for you in the passing game. And so I don't think he needs to get a ton better right away. I think eventually he'll need to get there. I think you need incremental improvement. We'll see whether or not he can pull that off. Question number three from Big Guy, that's at Nomar17. How big a deal is the possible return of Woody Johnson in the Jets GM search? To me, if I'm one of those guys, it is, if not the first question I ask, one of the first questions I ask. I think that's hanging over everything. Because if Woody Johnson gets back here in late 2020 and say the Jets have gone 7-9 or 8-8 this year or next, Woody could very easily walk right back in here and say, I want my own guy. I didn't hire Adam Gase. I didn't hire that GM. I'm starting over again with my quarterback, Sam Darnold. I'm going to go out and I'm going to hire a whole bunch of new guys. That possibility is absolutely out there. And so if you're a GM candidate, a lot of GMs, you know, you only get one shot at it. It's not like coaches. They aren't recycled the same way. I think you have to be very cognizant of that. And if you're a guy who has options, like a guy like Joe Douglas, who, you know, has been in this sort of spot before and probably will get shots again to be a general manager, I think you very much have to consider that part of it. Question number four from Brandon Silva. That's at Brando_Puma. With Watson being suspended for PED use, do you see the Patriots making a run for Kyle Rudolph? I think that they are quietly monitoring this. I can tell you for a fact, this is factual, that they have talked to the Vikings over the last couple of months about a potential trade. I think the number that he's at right now, which is over $7 million for this year, might be a little rich for their blood. But if the circumstances are right, I certainly could see them doing something. And I would say this, I pointed this out in my Monday afternoon column. the Patriots are not done adding at the tight end position. Like, I do not think that this, what they have right now, is what they necessarily will have in November, December. It reminds me a little bit of where they were at receiver in 2006 when they lost Deion Branch and they lost Rashay Caldwell. What did they do? Well, they wound up getting Jabbar Gaffney in October, getting Doug Gabriel in September. And so I think this is going to be an evolving process of trying to get that position right without Rob Gronkowski on the roster. Question number five is from Nick Spano. That's at Nick Spano. Chances that Jadeveon Clowney is dealt before the season. I think it's, at this point, unlikely just because the cap space across the league is low. Most teams have made their commitments. Most teams have their budgets set. And being able to take on a lump sum, a one-year number like that, I think would be very, very difficult. It's also hard, I think, to work out the sort of sign-and-trade type of scenario that you had with Frank Clark. Wasn't actually a sign-and-trade, but you know what I mean. They traded him, and then he signed a deal very, very quickly with the Chiefs. So I don't think he gets dealt before the season because I don't think the return is going to be great enough for the Houston Texans to jump through all of those hoops. So my guess is he plays in the one-year tender for the Texans in 2019. Finally, question number six from Raj. That's at RajPC1. On a percentile basis, God, you want an exact number, huh? How much credit would Sam Darnold deserve for being the reason the Jets' GM job might actually be considered attractive? I think it's a huge factor. I think it's, if Joe Douglas goes there, I will tell you that I think one of the main reasons Joe Douglas would go there would be Sam Darnold. I think there's a relationship with Gase. I think geography would be nice for him, but I do think Sam Darnold's a big part of that. And I think with any of these jobs, you know, if you're going to go be a GM or you're going to be a head coach somewhere, it's always going to be part of the consideration. What's happening at the most important position on the field? And I think Sam Darnold's shown enough over the last year for a lot of people to think, like, that's, despite everything that's wrong with that job, all the issues that you have, Woody coming back, all of the different stuff there, Sam, being able to build around Sam Darnold is not a horrible spot to be in. Okay, appreciate you guys coming out. As always, remember to listen to all of our podcasts. That's us, the Monday Morning Podcast, the Bad Movies Football Podcast. And give us your feedback, too. You know, you can do this on iTunes. You can get to me on Twitter, at Albert Breer. You can get to me on Facebook, at Albert R. Breer. You can get to me on Instagram, at Albert_Breer. Give us your feedback. This is a good time of year for us to recreate, to kind of add some stuff, to play with things. So whatever your feedback is for our podcast, we welcome it either on iTunes or on any of my social media challenges. Channels. See, that's where my head is right now. Any of my social media channels. You guys can get us in the Monday Morning Podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.